Most people assume that I came to belief through Christianity and then converted from Christianity to Islam. But actually, that's not true at all. My parents were Quaker, so technically Protestant. But they raised my brother and myself both to think for ourselves, and they never indoctrinated us into the religion. So we basically followed the path of atheism. We were raised in a scientific household. My father was a very well-respected visual neurophysiologist, and he himself, although he called himself Quaker, he openly stated that he did not believe in God, and he espoused the typical atheist doctrine and beliefs. He used to tell us, quite frankly, that he just believed after death it was just blackness, nothing, that was the end. And that was okay with him. He used to explain our existence the way all atheists explain it, namely the Big Bang and evolution. And so that's what I was raised upon. And so throughout my schooling, up through college, medical school, and so on, you know, we were raised to believe that that was the only thing that made sense. And yet, at the same time, I was raised with a scientific mind. And, you know, one thing I've noticed is that when people come to faith, regardless of what faith they come to, they start to question a lot of things that they never questioned before. And this is exactly what happened to me. The whole process of coming to faith for atheists is hard to understand. And I think there's a very good reason for that. And that is that I have never in my entire life ever met anybody who came to my religion, who came to Islam, except that at some point in their life they prayed for guidance. Even if it was the atheist's prayer. Now, the atheist's prayer is also known as the prayer of the skeptic. And the prayer is basically, oh God, if there is a God, save my soul, if I have a soul. So it's called the prayer of the skeptic for obvious reasons. But anybody who has heard my conversion story knows that this was integral to my pathway to becoming a believer in the existence of a creator. I won't say a specific religion, just the existence of a creator. It was through my path of discovery that I studied Judaism, Christianity, Islam, as well as a great deal of other religions, and ended up converting to Islam. And that prayer was integral. And anybody who knows my conversion story knows that I was praying for my daughter, who had been diagnosed with a life-threatening condition. And that's just exactly what I prayed. I prayed, oh God, if you are there. Just like the prayer of the skeptic. You know, I made a deal. I don't know if you're there or not, but if you are, I need help. And I promised, if you save my daughter's life that and guide me to the religion that is most pleasing to you, I will follow. Now, the point is that I don't know, and I've never met any convert to Islam, except that in some shape or form, they have prayed that prayer or something very similar to it, where they reached out to their creator, whether they already believed in him or not, and asked for guidance, and asked, oh God, guide me. And this, of course, is the one thing that atheists never do until they are taking that first step on the pathway of discovery. So one thing I like to point out is that if you're having a discussion with an atheist, it's going to go nowhere. If you have a believer on one side and an atheist who has never prayed for guidance on the other, it's just like, I mean, a person being lost in a city trying to find their destination. Just imagine that you're lost in a city and you don't have your cell phone, you don't have GPS, you don't have a map. If you don't ask for directions, how do you expect to get guidance? You know, if you're in a classroom and you don't ask the questions, how do you expect your professor to answer them, et cetera, et cetera? And if you don't ask for guidance from our Creator to the religion that is most pleasing to Him, How can you expect that that door in your heart and mind, that he will open them for you? Because we cannot open that door ourselves. The only thing that we can do, the only opening to the door that we can make, is to pray that prayer, to recognize our Creator and ask him for guidance. So if you find if you're the believer talking with the atheist, and the atheist has not even, you know, made that minimal, you know, effort to say, "Oh God, if you are there," how can it hurt to ask that? Okay, if there is no God, nothing changes. But if there is a God and he answers your prayer, everything changes. It's just my observation that when people come to belief, they start to question things. And so here I was, the atheist, who found myself challenged by a life circumstance that just knee-buckling, gut-wrenching, heart-tearing moment where I turned to my Creator, prayed for guidance, prayed for salvation of my daughter and for guidance, and found my prayer answered. Both in my daughter's life being saved and her becoming healthy, and in me feeling, for the first time in my life, the presence of my Creator. And so that was a real difficulty for a person who had previously explained everything by the Big Bang and evolution. So as I said, it forces you to rethink things, and I did start to rethink, and I started to sort of ponder over some of the issues, and I realized, you know, there's more that does not make sense about these things than does. At the simplest level, looking at the Big Bang, I remember how the theory of the Big Bang had changed even over my own lifetime. I remember when I was in college, the viewpoint at that point was basically that there had been a primordial dust cloud which had all come together, formed a hyperdense core, and exploded outwards, and that became the Big Bang. Now, over years, they started to reassess this, and where did the primordial dust cloud come from? That was one problem. Secondly, they started to think about it from an intellectual point of view and said, well, so whenever you have an explosion, things start traveling away from one another, but they slow down. And looking at things from a cosmological level, we know the force of gravity. So the supposition was that as things were flying outwards away from one another, the initial force of the explosion, that's finished, that's done. So what forces are left? The force of gravity, which as things are moving away from one another, should exert its pull to try to slow things down. And the theory became that as things moved outwards, the force of gravity would be pulling upon them until a point would come at which force of gravity would equal the outward force. So you would establish an equilibrium, and then the force of gravity would start to pull things back together again. And so everything would come back until it became once again a hyperdense core. Everything would be crushed together into this tiny little singularity, and then the whole process would repeat itself. So that became known as the Big Crunch, and then the second step of that became the theory that this was a repeating, you know, episode, that basically, you know, you had this sort of endless series of everything getting crushed together by gravity, exploding outwards, crushed together by gravity, exploding outwards, of course, over huge periods of time. But I'm still looking at this, trying to make sense of it, and wondering, but what is the origin? Where does all of this come from? I mean, how did it start? And I had the same thought about evolution. You can explain a lot with the theory of natural selection, but if you believe in the presence of a soul, you cannot explain the presence of a soul. And obviously, we all believe in the presence of life, but that's another thing that we cannot explain. You can Frankenstein together an animal out of working organs, but you cannot make it live. You can take a human being who has just died with everything still basically functional and cannot bring it back to life. Life is this indefinable essence which, once it escapes, we cannot put it back into an organism. How did that evolve? You know, it's an argument that has stumped atheists basically as far back as atheism was. And one thing I find kind of amusing is that a lot of atheists have said, oh, well, it came from outer space. Either it was seeded upon this planet by an asteroid or meteorite or something like this, but basically life somehow came from outer space. It reminds me of something that, you know, a joke that was told when I was in college. When I was in college, they told this joke about how a professor goes and gives this lecture about the universe, and at the end of the lecture, this old lady stands up and says, oh, young man, you really don't know what you're talking about. Everybody knows that the Earth is just balanced on the back of a turtle, a giant turtle. And the scientist just sort of nods and sort of winks at the students. You know, we're going to make fun of this old lady, and says, and what is the turtle standing on? And she looks at him and says, oh, you're so stupid. It's turtles all the way down. And everybody laughs at her ignorance and at the superior knowledge of the professor, of course. But what I find interesting is that you have these professors now saying that life came from outer space. And where did they get it from? It doesn't answer where did life come from ultimately. Okay, if you're going to say that it came from an asteroid or it came from aliens, where did they get it from? Other aliens or other asteroids. Where did that come from? Other aliens or other asteroids. And from there, other aliens, other asteroids. So basically, you have these scientists who are laughing at the old lady who says that it's turtles all the way down, and the scientists are the ones who are saying that it's aliens all the way up. It's a pretty ridiculous argument. We have this quality of life. We can give a working definition of what a living organism is, but we cannot define where that life came from. Whenever anybody talks to me about the theory of evolution and says this explains the diversity of life that we have, I point out that, you know, a theory is only as good as the foundation it stands upon. So when you talk to me about evolution, what evolution are you talking about? Biological evolution or chemical evolution? The vast majority of atheists, in my experience, when I ask them that question, they'll say, huh? And I'll say, yeah. Are you talking about biological evolution or chemical evolution? And they'll act like they know what I'm talking about, because of course they don't want to look stupid. But in the end, I have to remind them that biological organisms could not have come just sprung up from nothing. There was a time when, in the primordial earth, all we had were base elements, and those base elements had to come together to make complex molecules. From the complex molecules, even, you know, more complex molecules, eventually amino acids. Supposedly, the theory goes from amino acids to simple proteins, complex proteins, and these were the building blocks of life. That's chemical evolution. Nobody has ever explained how chemical evolution could have taken place. The original experiments by Stanley Miller, now known as the Miller-Urey experiments, have basically been disproven at this point. The gases that he mixed together to build amino acids were not the gases present in the primordial Earth. When you take the gases that were present in the primordial Earth and repeat the experiment, it doesn't work. Now, by the way, I'm not speaking without experience in these things. This foundational experiment, the Miller-Urey experiment, which supposedly showed how base elements could be converted into amino acids as the building blocks of protein, these were performed in the laboratory of Harold Urey, who is a Nobel laureate and a friend of our family. I'm familiar at a base level, not only with the experiments, but with the man. I met him. My parents were friends of his family. And it's interesting to me that Harold Urey himself was a deeply religious man. And he used to say that he never met a scientist of any true worth who was not religious. Make of that what you will, but the point is, talk about evolution, you have to take it to the foundation. If you're a billionaire or a multimillionaire and you're going to buy a building, what's basically the first thing that you want to know about the structural integrity of this building? The foundation. We don't want to talk about the 20th floor. We don't want to look at the penthouse until we know that that building is on a sound foundation, that it's not built on landfill, that it's not built in a flood zone, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And so it is with scientific theories. Returning to the Big Bang, one thing I want to say is, I mean, there's a lot that I want to say, and that will come out in future episodes. But one thing I want to say is that the confounding question of where it all came from is the foundation. That's the foundational issue. Now, I follow a religion which is compatible with the Big Bang. It's compatible with the belief that the universe came from a central point and expanded and is expanding. That's actually in our scripture. So I have no problem rectifying the Big Bang with my religion. But what I have problem with is saying that it was a spontaneous event. First of all, science teaches us that matter and energy are not created from nothing. They don't arise spontaneously. One can convert to the other and vice versa. But you do not get something from nothing. You know, the first law of thermodynamics is basically conservation of mass and energy, that mass and energy, you cannot create mass from nothing or energy from nothing. One can transfer to the other and vice versa. But mass and energy are basically conserved. Okay, so the concept of everything that we have coming from nothing violates the first law of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics is basically the law of entropy. Entropy basically teaching that any process tends towards randomness unless a greater power controls it, unless energy is exerted to keep it in order, to establish order. So, for example, whether you're talking about a chemical reaction or a physical process, or whether you're talking about the dishes in your kitchen sink or your teenage son or daughter's bedroom, these are things that degenerate into chaos unless effort is put into place to contain them. A chemical reaction has to be contained. The dishes have to be done or they pile up. Energy has to be put into the bedroom to establish order, to clean it up. So it is with any process. You have gas and you release it, it will expand out and just basically tend to greater and greater randomness as it spreads. But the effort to contain it is an effort. It requires energy. So it is with any physical process. It requires energy, and it requires basically a greater power to contain the process to prevent it from degenerating into randomness. And so the theory is that that applies to every single element in the universe, with the exception, of course, of the Big Bang, which is the one most cataclysmic event of all history. And in that case, this explosion has not tended towards randomness, but rather has tended towards a universe which is defined by a myriad of fine-tuned constants which basically dictate our existence. And we can talk about this more later, but I think everybody has heard the simple examples. The simple examples being things like, if the Earth was just a little bit closer to the Sun, then life would not be sustainable because of the heat. If the Earth was just a little bit farther away, again, life would not be sustainable because it would become too cold. Or if the Moon was just a little bit closer or a little bit further away or rotating at a different speed, da, 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 da. But there are other constants which are much more finely tuned even than these. And the point is that here you have this most cataclysmic event, the Big Bang, where, first of all, everything comes from nothing. I mean, the first law of thermodynamics tells us that you cannot even have a single atom. Not a single atom can come into existence from nothing. But science is telling us that this entire universe came into existence from nothing. And then secondly, with this cataclysmic explosion, instead of tending towards randomness, which is what the second law of thermodynamics dictates, we have tended to this universe that is in a state of balance that is almost unimaginable. When you look at the fine-tuned constants that define our universe, they boggle the mind. So, as a scientist, understanding these principles, and also understanding the backtracking that scientists make, okay, as soon as this was pointed out, the atheist scientists said, oh, yeah, those laws of thermodynamics, yes, they apply, but they only apply after the Big Bang happened. What is this? I mean, it's a rule or it's not a rule. As soon as they're challenged by it, as soon as they find they cannot explain it, their answer is, okay, those are rules, and we are going to stand on that foundation of our belief, but we're going to say that those rules only applied after the explosion. That's, from my viewpoint, that's just not science. That's just ridiculous. Looking at the theory of entropy, admitting that everything tends to randomness unless a greater power controls it. What is controlling the universe and keeping it from degenerating into that random state? Has to be a greater power. What greater power than a creator? Going back to the origin, Stephen Hawking and Penrose basically, two of the greatest astrophysicists of this age, have now developed what is regarded as basically the acceptable theory, the Hawking-Penrose theory, or model, I should say, of the Big Bang. And what they teach is that before the Big Bang, there was no mass, there was no energy. And get this, there was no time, and there was no space. A singularity arose from where they do not know. How? They cannot say. From what? Okay. And exploded outwards. Why? Again, they do not know. But despite all of these unanswered questions, the interesting thing to me is that they are now saying that before the singularity, there was no mass, energy, time, or space. Now think about that for a minute. Think about that for just a minute. Think about that for just a minute. Close your eyes and think about it. Imagine something with no mass or energy. Okay, that's a vacuum. That's a vacuum without any energy. Now imagine it without time, And now imagine it without space. What do you have? Absolute, total, and complete nothingness. Except, you know what? You have no space for that nothingness even to exist in. You have nothing. By this theory, scientists have painted themselves into a corner because they do not leave room for anything to exist before the Big Bang other than a transcendent creator. They have not left a space for things to develop in. They have not left a time frame for it to happen over. And they have not left the mass or energy that became all this mass and energy. They've left a total and complete nothingness within a nothingness, which means that there could basically be nothing to have preceded the Big Bang other than a transcendent creator of the Big Bang. One thing I find really amusing, listening to the talks by so many of the prominent atheists, and I don't want to name names, I'm just going to say, it's become a catchphrase to say, atheists, we go one God further. And, you know, the first time I heard it, I just kind of said, what? And I said, yeah, we go one God further. I had to look it up to see what on earth these people were talking about. And they said, okay, well, you know, the Hindus have these gods, and they say all those other gods are false gods. The Buddhists have this view of God, and they say, okay, those gods over there of the other religions, those are false gods. And the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims and the this and the that and so on. Everybody disavowing everybody else's gods, okay? And the atheists say, we go one God further, basically disavowing the one true God. There's a problem with this reasoning. There are lots of problems with this reasoning, but number one is that every religion in the world, whether they're monotheistic or polytheistic, every religion in the world has one feature in common, and that is that they believe in a creator of the world. Now, that one creator of the world might be, in a polytheistic religion, the big God, so to speak, or it might be one God that is in a mix of gods. But they do believe, everybody believes, every religion believes in one creator of the world. That is the one true God. So Jews believe in the monotheistic God, so do Christians, although they have this Trinitarian formula, so do Muslims, of course, and actually every religion in the world believes in a God, a creator of the world. But, you know, the bigger problem to me is that you find atheists criticizing the religious community as if they are unthinking or foolish. They're saying, oh, ha, 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 you know, you believe in this one thing that nobody can explain. So tell me this, who made such and such? And the religious person says, God. Who made such and such? And the religious person says, God. And then they say, and who made God? Ha, 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 ha. I gotcha. You know, this is their attitude. And the religious person says, God is transcendent, always was and always will be. We have a certain view of God, that he is all-powerful, all-knowing, and that he was there before us, will be there after us, and that he's eternal, one, absolute, and eternal. So we have a view of his qualities and his existence, although we do not understand it completely. We have the concept that he's one, eternal, absolute, that he does not beget, is not begotten, and there is none like unto him. We can recite the views of our religion. But that one question, who made this God, who made that God, who made God? We cannot answer better than what I've just said. But I have a question in reverse. And that is that atheists have a god of sorts. Their god is basically science, or maybe you could say their own intellect. If you're defining a god as the thing that they worship their minds. They worship the icons of their atheism, the main speakers, the main proponents. These are held as, in a religion, they would be regarded as saints, and the atheists hold them in high esteem in the same way a religion might hold those parallel figures as saints. But in the end, what they ultimately worship is they ultimately worship their own intellect or science. So, let me just point something out. I believe in a God who's the creator of the universe. Can I explain where that God came from? I won't say more than what I've already said. But what I can say is this. Believing in an all-knowing, all-powerful God explains every other question you can ask me. Believing in that one thing can explain where all creation came from. And it can answer every question within creation, because God is all-powerful. Let's look at the things that atheists cannot answer. Where did everything come from? Big Bang and evolution. Where did the Big Bang come from? They don't know. The singularity arose without time, without space, without mass, without energy. How did that happen? Don't know. What were the formative elements that brought the singularity into existence? Don't know. What were the forces that made it draw into a hyper-dense core? Can't say. What were the forces that, after drawing it into a hyperdense core, reversed, and instead of compacting it, made it explode and expand? Can't say. Where did all the mass and energy, where the first law of thermodynamics tells us, by the conservation of mass and energy, where did that come from, breaking your own rule of the first law of thermodynamics? Don't know. How did the one most cataclysmic explosion of all existence, how was that kept in check? In other words, how was that kept from just degenerating into total randomness, but instead developed into a universe of exquisite balance? Can't say. Who begins to look like more of a fool? With one somewhat spiritual and mysterious entity, to some extent, our Creator, the religious can explain everything. And in addition, we can explain the Big Bang, because in our scripture, our Creator himself speaks of a universe that is expanding. So we can actually answer, using scripture, we can actually answer the questions the scientists cannot. From that one belief, we can explain everything. From the atheists, basically one belief that there is no God, they can almost explain nothing. Like I said, who starts to look more foolish? If you are going to look at things from an intellectual point of view, the satisfaction of intellect is being able to explain things. And that is what, at this point, the scientific atheists are failing at doing. I mean, this is what they're failing at. So, you know, people ask me many times, you know, how I became religious. And this is part of the answer. And hopefully, over time, and with a series of these talks, I will expand upon this. And this is just the beginning. I hope all of you have found something of worth in this talk, and will stay tuned for future talks. So don't forget to click on subscribe. and we'll send you further vignettes in this series.